A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's reacting to the CIA announcing it's discontinuing the World Vac Book. His core question is, what else is out there that can give you an up-to-date, high-level snapshot of a country? GDP, religious makeup, demographics, all that. And crucially, something that's more editorially neutral and rigorously maintained than Wikipedia. He also mentions something I think is worth sitting with for a second, which is the difference between asking a question and getting an instant answer versus having reference material you can just, no target in mind, no query to optimize.
That distinction is the whole thing. The fact book wasn't just a lookup tool. It was a book you'd open to Yemen, and 3 hours later you're reading about the agricultural output of Lesotho with no memory of how you got there.
The Wikipedia rabbit hole's analog ancestor.
And the CIA announced this on June 12th. The fact book had been running since 1962. 64 years of continuous publication, and they're pulling the plug.
Before we get to alternatives, what was the fact book actually supposed to be? Because I think most people know it as this quirky almanac, but it was literally a CIA product.
It started as a classified document for policymakers, the National Intelligence Survey. The unclassified version launched in 1962 during the Kennedy administration, and the idea was to give you officials a single authoritative reference on every country. Geography, people, government, economy, military, communications, transnational issues. The first public edition sold for $1.50.
Which in 1962 money is what? About 15 bucks today?
Something like that. And it became this unexpected cultural artifact. Reporters used it. Students used it. The CIA was essentially running a public reference desk. There's something almost absurd about the world's premier intelligence agency moonlighting as a publisher of almanacs.
We spy on foreign governments. And also, here's the literacy rate in Burkina Faso.
They were good at it. The fact book had this clipped, almost literary concision. Every country entry followed the same structure, so you could compare across nations instantly. It wasn't written to be entertaining, but it had this deadpan voice that people genuinely loved.
There's a certain kind of mind that finds deep comfort in standardized data tables.
I am that kind of mind.
So why are they killing it?
The official statement from the CIA was that the information is now readily available from other sources, and that maintaining the fact book no longer aligns with their core intelligence mission, which, okay, is probably true in a narrow sense. You can Google any fact book stat in seconds. But the aggregation, the curation, the editorial voice, that's not available elsewhere.
This is the thing Daniel was getting at. There's a difference between querying a database and having a reference work. One is transactional. The other is, I don't know, epistemic leisure.
I'm writing that down.
You don't have a pen?
I'm writing it mentally. But you're right. The fact book was a product of a particular theory of knowledge, which is that having a comprehensive, structured overview of the world is a public good. The CIA wasn't doing this out of charity. It was originally for internal use. But the fact that they kept publishing it for 64 years says something about how institutions used to think about their relationship to public knowledge.
Now the assumption is that the market or the internet will fill the gap, which brings us to the actual question, what fills the gap?
Let's go through the candidates. I've been thinking about this since the announcement. There are maybe 5 or 6 serious alternatives, and they each have different strengths and weaknesses.
Lay them out.
First, the obvious one. The World Bank's World Development Indicators. This is the heavyweight. They track something like 1,400 indicators across 217 economies. GDP, poverty rates, health outcomes, education, infrastructure, environmental data. It goes back to 1960. It's free, it's searchable, and the data is rigorously vetted.
Is it browsable? Can I just flip through it like a book?
That's the weakness. It's a database, not a publication. You can download spreadsheets, use their API, generate charts, but there's no narrative, no country overview. No sense of, here is Laos, start here. It's fantastic if you know what you're looking for. Terrible if you want to discover what you don't know.
It fails the rainy day test.
Second candidate is the UN's Human Development Reports. These come out annually. They have country profiles, and they include the Human Development Index, which combines life expectancy, education, and income into a single number. The country profiles are actually quite good. They're narrative, they have context, they're not just tables.
The editorial neutrality.
The UN obviously has a development agenda. They're not pretending to be neutral about poverty reduction, but the data itself is solid and the methodology is transparent. The downside is they're focused on development outcomes, not the kind of broad snapshot the Factbook provided. You won't find military expenditures or telecommunications infrastructure in the HDR.
It's a slice, not the whole pie.
Third option, and this is the one I think comes closest to the Factbook in spirit, the CIA's own successor, the World Leaders Directory, and the various open-source intelligence products they still publish. But those are fragmented now. They're not a single volume.
Wait, they're killing the Factbook, but they still have other public-facing products?
Yes, and this is what's frustrating. They maintain the Chiefs of State and Cabinet Members of Foreign Governments Directory, which is updated weekly. They publish various intelligence assessments. The information isn't disappearing. It's being unbundled. The Factbook was the one-stop shop, and now you have to know which shop to visit for which thing.
The CIA is essentially saying, the information is still out there. We're just not going to put it in one place for you anymore.
Which is precisely the value they were providing. Aggregation is work. Curation is work. Editorial consistency across 260-plus entities is enormous work.
What about the OECD?
The OECD's Better Life Index and their country statistical profiles are excellent, but they only cover 38 member countries plus a handful of key partners. If you want data on, say, Myanmar or Bolivia, the OECD isn't your source. Also, the OECD has a very clear policy orientation. They're advocates for market economies and liberal democracy. It's not propaganda, but it's not neutral in the way the Factbook aimed to be.
The Factbook's neutrality was always a little weird, though, right? It was the CIA. They had a perspective, even if it was buried in the footnotes.
The perspective mostly showed up in the transnational issues section, where they'd list disputes and illicit activities. The demographic and economic data was pretty straight. You could quibble with some of the GDP estimates, but they were transparent about methodology. It wasn't Pravda.
We've got the World Bank for data, the UN for development snapshots, the OECD for rich countries.
Here's one that people overlook, the Economist Intelligence Unit. They publish country reports that are excellent, political stability, economic outlook, regulatory environment, risk assessments. Very much aimed at business decision makers, so the lens is commercial rather than general reference. And they're expensive. A single country report can run hundreds of dollars.
Not a rainy day book you pull off the shelf.
Unless your rainy day involves deciding whether to open a factory in Vietnam, but the quality is high. Fifth option, and this one's interesting, the BBC's country profiles. These are free, they're regularly updated, they have a consistent format, and they're written for a general audience. The BBC has a reputation for editorial impartiality, at least in their factual reporting. The profiles include history, politics, economy, and key facts.
I've used those. They're good. They're also...
That's the trade-off. They're designed for quick consumption, not deep reference. A BBC country profile might be 1,500 words. A Factbook entry could be 10 times that.
What about the European Union's Statistical Office?
Same problem as the OECD, but more so. It's exclusively European. Fantastic data quality, terrible scope if you care about the rest of the world.
None of these fully replace the Factbook. They each cover part of what it did.
And that's the structural problem. The Factbook was this weird institutional accident, a spy agency producing a public reference work that happened to be comprehensive, readable, free, and globally scoped. Nobody designed it to fill that role. It just did. And when you lose an accident like that, the market doesn't necessarily produce a replacement because there's no obvious business model for comprehensive neutral almanac of every country on Earth, updated annually, given away for free.
This is the public goods problem. The Factbook was a public good produced as a byproduct of an intelligence function. Now that the intelligence function has moved on, the public good vanishes, and nobody's economic incentive is to recreate it.
Wikipedia tries, and I know Daniel specifically asked about alternatives that are more editorially neutral than Wikipedia. Let's talk about that, because it's a nuanced question. Wikipedia's country articles are, in many cases, quite good. They're detailed, they're frequently updated, they cover history and demographics and economy. The problem isn't accuracy per se. Studies have shown Wikipedia compares reasonably well to traditional encyclopedias on factual matters. The problem is editorial stability and neutrality.
The edit war problem.
Country articles, especially for geopolitically sensitive nations, are constant battlegrounds. The article on Israel, the article on China, the article on Kashmir, these are not stable reference documents. They're negotiated texts that shift with whoever has the most energy to edit that week.
The demographic data Daniel was asking about, religious composition, ethnic groups, those are exactly the sections where Wikipedia gets contested.
Because those numbers have political implications. What percentage of Syria is Sunni versus Shia versus Alawite? That's not just a fact. It's a claim about political legitimacy and minority rights and electoral math. The Factbook could just publish a number. Wikipedia has to negotiate it.
The Factbook had the advantage of being able to say, "This is our best estimate. Take it or leave it." They weren't accountable to an editing community.
The CIA didn't have a talk page, and that's actually a feature, not a bug, for this kind of reference work. You want an authoritative voice that says, "Here's what we think the number is," even if that number is imperfect. Wikipedia's model of consensus-driven knowledge works well for some things, but is not optimized for the kind of definitive, single-voice reference that the Factbook provided.
If Wikipedia isn't the answer, and none of the individual alternatives fully replace the Factbook, what's the practical recommendation? If someone wants to look up Syria's religious demographics right now, what do they do?
I'd say the practical answer is a composite approach, which I realize is less satisfying than "here's the one book," but hear me out. For demographic data, population, religion, ethnicity, languages, the UN Population Division's World Population Prospects and the Pew Research Center's religious composition data are both excellent and methodologically transparent. Pew in particular has done comprehensive global religious mapping that's widely cited and regularly updated.
Pew's religious landscape reports are good.
For economic data, the World Bank's World Development Indicators are the gold standard. For political structure and leadership, the CIA's own Chiefs of State Directory is still being maintained and is updated weekly. For a narrative overview, the BBC Country Profiles are the most accessible free option. And for truly deep dives, the Library of Congress Country Studies, which are older but historically rich, are available online.
You're recommending a stack of 5 different sources instead of one book.
I hate it too, but that's the reality of the post-factbook world. The information exists. It's just fragmented across institutions with different mandates, different update schedules, and different editorial standards.
There's something else here that I want to pull on. Daniel mentioned the difference between querying and browsing, and I think that's actually the deeper loss. When you have a reference book, you encounter information you weren't looking for. You open to Syria and end up reading about Jordan's water resources because they're on the facing page. That kind of serendipitous learning doesn't happen when you type a question into a search box.
This is a known phenomenon in information science. They call it incidental information acquisition. Studies have shown that people learn more and retain more when they encounter information in a browsable structure versus a query response structure. The physical book, or even a well-designed digital facsimile of one, creates adjacency. Adjacency creates discovery.
The algorithm doesn't give you Jordan when you ask about Syria. It gives you exactly Syria, and only the part of Syria you asked about.
This connects to something bigger, which is that we're increasingly moving from pull-based information consumption to push-based. You don't go find information anymore. Information finds you based on what an algorithm thinks you want. A reference book is the ultimate pull medium. You have to choose to open it. You have to choose what page to turn to. That act of choosing, of directing your own attention, is cognitively different from receiving answers to questions.
It's the difference between exploring a map and following GPS directions. With GPS, you get where you're going efficiently. With a map, you learn the territory.
And the Factbook was a map of the world. Not a perfect map, not an infinitely detailed map, but a map you could spread out on the table and study.
What do we actually lose, long-term, when we lose reference works like this? Not just the Factbook specifically, but the entire category of comprehensive, browsable, editorially curated reference materials.
I think we lose three things. First, we lose the common factual baseline. When everyone is consulting different sources or algorithmically personalized sources, you don't have a shared set of, here's what we agree, the basic facts are. The fact book was a reference that a journalist in London and a student in Nairobi and a policymaker in Tokyo could all consult and get the same numbers. That's not nothing.
A shared reality requires shared references.
Second, we lose the editorial accountability. When you publish a book with your institution's name on it, you're accountable for errors. You issue corrections. You have a reputation to maintain. When information is atomized across 1,000 different web pages, accountability diffuses. Nobody's reputation is on the line for getting Syria's religious demographics wrong on some random infographic site. Third, we lose the browsing experience you described. The unplanned learning. The ability to spend an afternoon with a book and come away knowing things you didn't know you wanted to know. That's not a small loss. That's a loss in how we relate to knowledge itself.
It's also a loss in cognitive patience. Browsing a reference book requires a certain kind of attention. Unhurried, non-utilitarian, open-ended. That's a muscle that atrophies when all your information comes in response to specific queries.
There's research on this. Nicholas Carr's work on what the internet is doing to our brains, Marianne Wolfe's work on deep reading. The medium shapes the mode of thought. A reference book invites a mode of thought that a search engine doesn't.
Though I'll push back slightly. The fact book was also available as a website. It's not like it was only a physical book.
The website version was actually updated more frequently than the annual print edition. But the structure was still book-like. You navigated by country, by section, by category. The architecture of the information was designed for browsing, not just searching.
The format matters more than the medium.
A well-structured digital reference work can absolutely support browsing. Wikipedia actually does this reasonably well with its internal links. But Wikipedia lacks the editorial voice, the single authoritative perspective, the sense that someone has made decisions about what's important enough to include and what isn't.
The factbook had a voice. That clipped, slightly bureaucratic, occasionally unintentionally funny voice. Do you remember the entry for the Spratly Islands?
I don't remember the specifics.
I'll paraphrase from memory. It was something like, the Spratly Islands consist of more than 100 small islands, reefs, and atolls scattered over a vast area of the South China Sea. The islands themselves are of little economic value, but claims to the islands are used to bolster claims to the surrounding seabed, which is believed to contain significant oil and gas deposits. That the islands themselves are of little economic value is doing so much work in one sentence.
That's classic factbook. Understatement as a rhetorical device. They describe a territorial dispute involving six nations and nuclear-capable navies with the same tone they'd use for agricultural output statistics.
The dispute remains unresolved.
And that voice was part of the appeal. It wasn't just data. It was data delivered with a particular institutional sensibility. You knew you were reading the CIA's assessment, and that awareness was part of the reading experience.
Which raises a question. Is there any hope of the factbook being revived? Not necessarily by the CIA, but by someone else.
The public domain status of the factbook is interesting here. As a UW government publication, it's not copyrighted. Anyone can take the existing factbook data and republish it, build on it, create a successor. The question is whether anyone will invest the resources to maintain that level of comprehensive global coverage with regular updates.
Has anyone tried?
There have been various projects over the years. The World Factbook has been mirrored and archived. There are GitHub repositories with the data. But maintaining it, actually keeping 260-plus country entries current, verifying statistics, writing new sections as the world changes, that's a significant ongoing investment. It's not a one-time project. It's a commitment.
It's a coordination problem. The data is free, but the work isn't.
And this is where I think there's a genuine opportunity for a university consortium or a well-funded nonprofit to step in. Imagine if the Carnegie Endowment or the Brookings Institution or a coalition of research universities took over the factbook model. You'd have editorial independence, academic rigor, and a funding model that doesn't depend on advertising or subscriptions.
Has anyone floated that?
Not that I've seen in the week since the announcement, but it's early. The factbook's discontinuation caught a lot of people off guard. I suspect we'll see proposals in the coming months.
In the meantime, for the listener who wants something they can actually use today, what's the closest single volume alternative?
If you want a physical book, the Europa World Year book is probably the closest thing. It's been published annually since 1926. Two volumes, covers every country, includes political and economic surveys, statistical data, directory information. It's comprehensive. It's also, and I want to be upfront about this, about $1,500. For the two-volume set, yes. It's aimed at libraries and institutions, not individuals. Most people access it through university libraries.
Go to a library is part of the answer.
And that's not a bad answer. University libraries subscribe to a range of reference databases, Europa World, the EIU Country Reports, the World Bank Data Tools. If you have library access, you already have better alternatives than the Factbook. The problem is for everyone else.
The Factbook was democratic in a way that most high-quality reference works aren't. Free, accessible, no login required.
That's the thing worth mourning. Not just the content, but the accessibility model. The CIA accidentally created one of the world's most democratic reference works, and now it's gone.
Let's talk about the statistical yearbooks. The UN Statistical Yearbook, for instance.
The UN Statistical Yearbook is in its 68th edition. It's free online. It covers everything from population to energy production to internet access. The data is solid, but it's organized by topic, not by country. So if you want to know everything about Syria, you have to jump between sections. It's not a country-level reference in the way the Factbook was.
It's reference material for people who already know what kind of data they want.
It's a tool for analysts, not for curious generalists. The Factbook was rare in serving both audiences. An analyst could pull specific statistics, and a curious generalist could spend an afternoon learning about Vanuatu.
What about the Statesman's Yearbook?
Another excellent option, and more affordable than Europa World, published since 1864. Covers every country with concise political and economic profiles. The current edition is about $150, and many libraries have it. It's edited by Palgrave Macmillan, so there's genuine editorial oversight. The profiles are shorter than the Factbooks, but they're well-written and regularly updated.
1864. That's older than the Factbook.
By nearly a century. And it's still going, so the format isn't dying. The Statesman's Yearbook proves there's still demand for comprehensive country reference. The CIA just decided it wasn't their job anymore.
Which, to be fair, it arguably never was. It was a historical accident.
A happy accident. And now we're left figuring out what replaces it.
I want to circle back to something. Daniel mentioned the erosion of non-targeted reference reading as an activity with far-reaching consequences. I think he's right. And I think one of those consequences is what happens to our ability to hold mental models of the world that are nuanced and multidimensional.
Say more about that.
When you only look up specific facts in response to specific questions, your knowledge of a country tends to be issue by issue. You know Syria's civil war, Syria's refugee crisis, Syria's religious demographics, but you don't necessarily know how those things connect. A reference book forces you to see the whole picture. Here's the geography. Here's the population. Here's the economy. Here's the government. Here are the transnational issues. All in one place, all structured so you can see how the pieces fit together.
Systems thinking requires seeing the system.
And a good reference work presents the system. Not in analytical form. The Factbook didn't tell you how Syria's water scarcity connected to its political instability, but it gave you all the pieces on adjacent pages so your brain could make the connections.
This is why I've always thought the Factbook was secretly one of the best educational tools ever created. It didn't teach, it just presented. And the presentation was structured so that learning happened as a byproduct of reading.
The best kind of learning.
So to wrap up the practical recommendation, if you're looking for a direct Factbook replacement, there isn't one. But the composite approach I'd recommend is the UN's World Population Prospects for Demographics, the World Bank's World Development Indicators for Economics, the BBC Country Profiles for Narrative Overview, and the CIA's own Chiefs of State Directory for Political Leadership. If you have library access, add the Europa World Yearbook or the Statesman's Yearbook. And if you want religious demographics specifically, Pew Research Center is your best source.
That's a lot of tabs to keep open.
And that's the problem. The Factbook was one tab.
Or no tabs. It was a book.
It was a book. And sometimes a book is the superior technology.
I think that's a good place to land. The loss of the World Factbook isn't a data loss. The data is still out there. It's a loss of curation, of editorial voice, of browsing as a mode of learning, and of a shared factual commons that anyone with an internet connection could access for free.
It's a reminder that public goods don't maintain themselves. They require institutional commitment. When the institution walks away, the public good vanishes unless someone else steps up.
If any well-funded nonprofits are listening,
please revive the Factbook. Name it something else if you have to, but give us back our almanac.
Now, Hilbert's Daily Fun Fact.
In the early 1500s, the Maya of present-day Belize were constructing underground water storage systems called chultuns, and recent acoustic surveys of similar subterranean chambers in the region suggest the reverberation patterns inside these structures would have made whispered conversations clearly audible at distances of over 30 feet.
The Maya invented the whispering gallery centuries before St. Paul's Cathedral.
Subterranean acoustics and water storage.
For recommendations, reviews, or to send us your own prompts, visit myweirdprompts.com. You can also find us on Spotify and Telegram. This has been My Weird Prompts. I'm Korn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. The World Factbook is survived by a dozen fragmented alternatives and a generation of readers who didn't know what they were losing.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.